Have you ever wanted to be more than you are? Are you worried your full potential isn't enough? Ever wonder if finding that out is worth your soul? Best Event Ever is back for 2018 with DC's 1995 event, Underworld Unleashed. Several blogs and podcasts are coming together to examine the effects these questions have on the heroes and villains of the DC universe. Join Justice's First Dawn, Comic Reviews by Walt, Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill, Pop Culture Palace, Diana Prince Wonder Woman, and Between the Pages, among others, as they examine the effects these questions have on characters like Ted Knight, Blue Devil, Sentinel, the Martian Manhunter, and Darkseid. Follow them all using hashtag BestEventEver2018 and hashtag UnderworldReUnleashed across social media, all throughout October. Go ahead. Blow out that candle. Neron is waiting.
As befits the most famous Wonder Woman villain, I've already covered the Cheetah at some length in several episodes of this podcast. Probably the best Cheetah story we have discussed so far featured an off-model but compelling version of the original Priscilla Rich incarnation in Alex Ross's Justice Maxi series, which you can hear on episode 14 as part of the JL May 2017 podcast crossover. I also offered a critical overview of the third Cheetah, Barbara Ann Minerva, in the second episode of the show. However, I'm just a few days shy of having taken a full-year sabbatical for producing the Diana Prince Wonder Woman podcast, and we're returning as part of a multimedia fan appreciation crossover called Best Event Ever, covering Underworld Unleashed. Further, Barbara Minerva makes her live-action feature film debut next year in the sequel Wonder Woman 1984. I felt that we needed to do something special with the only episode to come out so far this year, and that Minerva rates a much more thorough examination. Dr. Minerva is not yet the longest-lasting Cheetah, as Priscilla Rich's time technically lasted from 1943 until 1980, but Minerva is vastly the most prolific bearer of the title, having appeared in many hundreds of stories compared to the relative handfuls enjoyed by Rich and the largely forgotten Debbie Domain incarnation. Rather than synopsize each issue, as can be heard in other podcasts like Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace, I'll first take advantage of the best published career overview that I'm aware of, written by Mark Waid for November 1990's Who's Who in the DC Universe number 4. Barbara Ann Minerva had carved out a reputation as an archaeologist and treasure hunter, but at great cost. On the one hand, she was responsible for countless important historical finds. On the other, her predatory ruthlessness made her willing to use any means at her disposal to achieve her goals. Her last expedition took her through Africa toward the lost temple of Urzkartaga, home of the legendary tribe who reportedly worshipped a mystical cat goddess who took the form of a human cheetah. Unbeknownst to Minerva and her companion, Dr. Levins, the native priest who served as her guide had led the expedition party into a trap. Minerva's party was attacked by the people of Urzkartaga, who planned to use the explorers as blood sacrifices for the cat god. Despite overwhelming odds, Minerva and Levins escaped the ambush and later returned to the temple under cover of darkness. From their vantage point, they saw the sacrificial ceremony that revived and resuscitated Urzkartaga's cat god, when suddenly another group of natives, a band armed with semi-automatic weapons, burst from the jungle to massacre the Urzkartagans, whose sacrifice had taken the lives of many of their own people. In the melee, the cat god was killed and the temple razed, and Minerva found herself trapped within the temple's ruins along with the native priest, Chuma, and the slain cat god. At Minerva's command, Chuma explained the ritual and history of the cat god. Minerva, wishing to command the cat god's power, demanded to be subjected to the ritual herself, even though part of the ritual required her to kill Levins and drink his blood. Painted with sacred designs and dressed in the skin of the cat god, she took the potion and became the cheetah. Because the ritual required a subject to be a virgin, a requirement Minerva could not meet, the cheetah spell took its toll on her. In between doses of the rare elixir prepared by her new companion, Chuma, Minerva's body became progressively weaker. Addicted to the power of the cheetah, she was driven to hunting down victims to sacrifice in order to maintain her power. Sometime later, during the media blitz that accompanied Wonder Woman's arrival in America, Minerva read about Wonder Woman's golden lasso, forged from the legendary golden girdle of Gaia. Obsessed with the thought of owning such a valuable artifact, she vowed to make it her own. As Cheetah, she attacked Wonder Woman, but failed to capture her lasso. Several months later, she used her power and influence to arrange for a band of captured alien invaders to steal it from her, then assumed her Cheetah form and killed them. The subsequent turn of events surprised even Minerva. The lasso itself compelled her to travel to Asia and drew her toward a hidden Egyptian mosque. There she found the long-hidden second girdle of Gaia and took it as her own. By the time Wonder Woman traveled to Egypt and tracked Minerva down, the Amazon race whose mosque Minerva had defiled had gone after Minerva as well. In the ensuing three-way battle, Chuma was killed, and the girdle and lasso were regained by the respective owners. In the aftermath of the battle, Minerva continued to be possessed by the spirit of the Cheetah, but was severely weakened by her addiction to the elixir that gave her her powers, the spirit of which died with Chuma. With her health slowly and continually ebbing, she is currently incarcerated, pending trial for several murders. Powers and weapons. A deadly and powerful hand-to-hand combatant, the Cheetah is incredibly fast. She possesses superhuman strength and agility, acute night vision, and razor-sharp claws that pierce flesh and stone with equal ease. She is also capable of using her prehensile tail as a weapon to strike out and strangle her opponent. While we're on the subject of data files, I'd like to point out that Cheetah's comparatively shoddy treatment is one of many signs of DC's historical disinterest in the villainess and Wonder Woman in general. First, Cheetah received a premature entry in their Who's Who Update 87 that was filled with questionable suppositions and light on facts. Then in the hardcover DC encyclopedias from the 21st century, three of the four Cheetahs had to share a single page with the likes of Chemical King and Kimmo. The initial Barbara Minerva entry had errors and listed events out of sequence, and these went uncorrected in the revised edition. A property's historical and commercial value dictated their allotted space in the encyclopedias, as well as the personal investment of the team of researchers. A character who had their own solo series like Amethyst could reasonably expect to receive at least a quarter page entry, but typically more like one third or even one half. This was also true for noteworthy villains, especially those tied to iconic heroes. In the first edition, the likes of Brainiac, Mr. Freeze, the Penguin, Ra's al Ghul, the Riddler, Two-Face, and Zoom rated a full page. And the second edition, luminaries like Catwoman expanded to a double page spread, while the Joker and Lex Luthor possessed that from Jump. Black Manta, Captain Cold, Harley Quinn, Metallo, Parasite, Reverse Flash are examples that received a half page. Folks like Captain Boomerang, Gorilla Grodd, Hector Hammond, and Sinestro were closer to a third or quarter page. Barbara Minerva barely received more room than 20%. None of Wonder Woman's rogues received a full page, though Cersei came the closest with 2 of 3 column space, forcing 2 minor additional entries into 1 column. The third Cheetah's origin story was first relayed in Wonder Woman Volume 2, number 28 through 29, cover dated March through April 1989, by writer-creator George Perez, with art by Chris Marinan and Will Blyberg. It was largely narrated by Chuma, a mostly naked, aged, pygmy tribal witch doctor whose grotesquely oversized lips filled as much as a third of his wrinkled head in some renditions. Chuma spoke in an unholy hybrid of Pidgin English and Ebonics. So this is nearly 2 full issues of menstrual Yoda literally deifying his abusive white female colonialist savior, which in and of itself should render Minerva irredeemably toxic property. An element left out of Mark Waid's entry was that the first unnamed African Cheetah had safeguarded her village too well, so that none dared come near. So she and the bloodvine were long deprived of fresh blood. After living for centuries, she began to wither into an old crone and die. The cult of the vine began to venture outside the village to abduct the drunk and infirm to feed Urskatarga, which attracted the attention of other tribes, who began capturing and torturing isolated cultists. Most died keeping their silence, but one gave up valuable information and was later hunted and killed by the tribal Cheetah. Though she had not fed on this traitor, the execution created a crisis in confidence among the cultists, ultimately leading to a bad turn of tribal fortunes and the murder of all but one of the Cheetah's priests. Chuma watched the bride of Urskatarga grow weaker, and so plotted to lure Minerva's expedition as a last-ditch bid for her salvation through human sacrifice. In his zeal and desperation, Chuma was all too eager to give over the power of the Cheetah to an ignorant, belligerent foreigner. When Urskatarga punished Minerva after consummating their marriage for having had, by her own statement, many lovers before him, rather than seek another host, Chuma committed to groveling servitude to Minerva as her condition worsened year after year. By enabling and fawning over this white woman, Chuma demonstrated his commitment to her over his own god, and swapped his priesthood out to become a houseboy. The subplot that introduced Barbara Minerva into comics began in the August 1987 cover dated Wonder Woman number 7 by George Perez, Lynn Wein, and Bruce D. Patterson. From her ancestral home in Nottingham, England, Minerva read about the so-called Wonder Woman and learned of her possession of a lasso forged from the golden girdle of the Earth goddess Gaia. In the following issue, Minerva and the servant, who she often refers to as Old Man, fly to Princess Diana's adoptive home of Boston, Massachusetts. We witness Minerva's ill temperament toward all who encounter her, her complaints of constant pain, and requiring a cane to walk. Chuma displayed a surprising martial arts ability given his slight frame, and Minerva demonstrated her loyalty by killing and eating a smuggler who was helping to set up her scam on Wonder Woman. The story, Blood of the Cheetah, marked her full debut another month later. It detailed the hours-long ritual that allowed Minerva to transform on a full moon after roughly a full day of sleep and metamorphosis. While this depiction was tense, especially the single page where she turns into the cheetah, it also binds her to a number of limitations not inflicted upon other felines that predated her in comics like Tigra, Panthera, Rena, and Cat's Eye, who could either transform at will or at least held their half-cat forms over less restrictive durations. Also, while the initial confrontation between Cheetah and Wonder Woman is exciting, no greater motivation is given for Minerva's pursuit of the Lasso of Truth beyond a desire to possess it, and the distraction that pursuit affords her from her pain. The attack also prompts Diana to cut short her tour of Man's World, break her contract with her publicist, and mostly just serving as a setup to allow for the Challenge of the Gods story arc, which in turn necessitated painfully forced elements by its company-mandated inclusion in the Millennium crossover in the third and fourth chapters. Perez's inability to play well with DC's initiatives would bite Wonder Woman on the backside again and again. As part of 1995's Year One theme, the second encounter within Cheetah took place in Wonder Woman Annual No. 4 by Kate Worley, Brent Anderson, and Ken Branch. Archaeologist Julia Capitellis, in whose Boston home Diana was living, and who had saved her life by shooting Cheetah with a rifle, was invited to a dig in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Looting was rampant in a newly discovered temple dedicated to a jaguar god, and Wonder Woman joined the expedition to help stop it. Hunting had been poor for Barbara and Chuma in the desert, so they were financing the looters, and Cheetah was dining on unfortunates at the site. Eventually, one of the preservationists was wrongly arrested by corrupt local police, and another was killed by Cheetah. The goddess Artemis appeared and encouraged the jaguar god Balaam to avenge the death of one of his followers, but Diana denied them both this justice in the name of defending a woman's life, even though she was by this point already a mass murderer. Artemis begrudgingly refused to allow Balaam to harm Diana, and thus an indigenous god was brought to heel by what was represented as his Caucasian woman superior, mirroring the grotesque dynamic between Minerva and Chuma, hashtag white feminism. Aside from getting the script of Omaha the Cat Dancer to write a Cheetah story, the annual was unexceptional. Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale are the much-lauded creative team behind such works as The Long Halloween and Superman for All Seasons, but hardly anyone brings up the six-issue Catwoman miniseries When in Rome from 2005 because it's not very good. A side story taking place during the Dark Victory maxi-series, Selina Kyle and the Riddler detour to Italy where they become embroiled in mafia intrigue and some broad sex comedy. Batman manages to turn up at every issue thanks to tedious dream sequences. Selina spends much of the flat, meandering, advertised but incompetent murder mystery in various statesman dress, and there's a continuity-breaking role played by the Cheetah. You see, the Loeb cell material is slavishly devoted to Miller and Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One, which officially took place years before the arrival of Wonder Woman. But here, Cheetah is established as a commonly known three-time Amazing Amazon adversary. Further, she's weak enough for a fight between Catwoman and Cheetah to appear fair, as Minerva is working as a mercenary for the Mafia, seeking a ring that bestows ultimate donhood on anyone who possesses it. And also, Kyle's hitman love interest knocks her out in seconds with one shot from a tranquilizer gun. At one point, Catwoman chokes Cheetah with her own prehensile tail, because Loeb always gets off on having an alpha character type ridiculously pwn any betas in sight. Did I mention that at one point Catwoman cuts a revolver in half with her claws? A superhuman feat never matched by the actual superhuman she's supposed to be fighting here. Further, in the climax, Catwoman takes out Cheetah, Scarecrow, the Riddler, and a guy using Mr. Freeze's gun when they all gang up on her. And the cherry on top is that Tim Sale draws one of the most amateurishly unfortunate Cheetahs I've ever had the misfortune to see. It was sexist crap even before it dragged the Wonder Woman mythos down with it. 2001's JLA Incarnations by Ostrander and Simix was set in 1988's continuity thanks to the appearance of the short-lived Colonel Roman Harjavti. The Cheetah was one of many dozen villains vacationing in the Middle Eastern country by Alia, who had her bank account skimmed by the dictator, leading to a super riot requiring the intervention of the Justice League International. Cheetah began her chronological return in 1989's Wonder Woman number 27, the issue where she rooks and kills the two Kund warriors as a distraction to allow her to steal the Lasso of Truth, which was covered in detail on the 38th episode of the now-complete First Strike Invasion podcast. The following issue was also where Perez quietly retconned Diana's induction into Justice League Europe into merely an agreement to take a meeting with them during a European tour she used as cover while searching for Cheetah. I wonder if she made any stops in Oceania along the way. Diana also spends a couple of issues lying on a wooden floor listening to Chuma's horrendous monologuing while pretending to have been poisoned. Plus, there's the introduction of the Banna McDonald Amazons, who are also arguably racist caricatures of violent Persian religious zealots, who are also the biggest bunch of dicks despite not having a single one between them. I give credit to underappreciated inker Will Blyberg for elevating Chris Marinan's stiff, unpleasant, and often grotesque visuals to the level of a low-selling Marvel title from a decade earlier, making these issues slightly less a chore to plow through. By number 31, Diana's been poisoned several times while consistently distrusting mistrusted, imprisoned, and abused by the Alterna Amazons, but finally gives into her own bloodlust to rip Cheetah's tail off and beat her to a bloody mess. Then the damn thing goes on for another 3 issues of Bannon McDonald's shenanigans, and Barbara's left on the back burner. Without Chuma and her potion, Barbara's confined to a bed, and a diplomat arranges for her to be detained somewhere out of the way, so she can hopefully just die quietly instead of requiring a costly, messy trial. Obviously, the extra Amazons should have just executed Cheetah for murdering their queen, but Diana prevented that. Minerva was committed to Arkham Asylum until she was restored in a series of War of the Gods tie-in issues, beginning with a September 1991 cover dated Wonder Woman number 58 by Perez and various artists. Doesn't Boston have any sanatoriums of their own? The sorceress Cersei sent one of her male bestiomorphs to Arkham in the form of a small bird. Mikos force-fed the bound Minerva a new formula that renewed her cheetah powers and freed her from her reliance on Chuma and the Vine. However, Cheetah now was dependent on the formula to survive, and so was enslaved by Cersei. Dr. Minerva advised Cersei on the acquisition of mystical artifacts that helped her in her grand crossover gambit, and Cheetah further participated in the delivery of a poison chalice to enslave Queen Hippolyta. Aching for her freedom and wary of the threat Cersei posed to the entire planet, Cheetah kidnapped Vanessa Capitalis, Julia's daughter, to lure Inspector Ed and Delicato to a church, where she could reveal what she knew of Cersei's plans in hopes of helping Diana unravel them. Her treachery was detected, and bestiomorphs were sent after Cheetah, who fled the scene. She was seen again in the Operation Cheetah arc that launched the William Esther Loeb's run of the title with a 1992 special, which I covered in episode 13. Cheetah was also present to close out the Esther Loeb's run, beginning with issue number 94 in 1995. Cheetah joined other supervillainesses to capture Diana, but Cheetah also helped her escape and confront the White Magician as a way to repay her efforts that were dedicated to saving her life. Cheetah was gravely injured and appeared to be possessed by some sort of demon before being teleported to parts unknown by Cersei, who was also paying off a debt she owed Diana. The matter of what happened to Cersei and Cheetah was never addressed, but both turned up in the Underworld Unleashed event miniseries by Wade and Porter. Cheetah is one of many dozens of supervillains who lit a fluorescent lime green candle that transported them unmasked to a realm of hell. The minor menace Copperhead was slashed when he tried to stroke Cheetah's fur, and that nearly led to a fight with Shrapnel, reinforcing Cheetah's modest level in the bad guy hierarchy through association. Further up the food chain, the Flash rogue Abracadabra made contact with a metaphysical presence known as Neron, helped set up his arrival on the material plane, and the fiends Cersei, Lex Luthor, Dr. Polaris, and the Joker soon formed an inner circle of early adopters of this demonic presence. To save some time, let's read his entry from the second edition of the DC Comics Encyclopedia. Neron. Occupation, soul-taking demon. Special powers and abilities, a lord of lies. Neron possesses unspeakable mystic power and can alter his size and shape. The deaths of 5 of the second Flash's rogues gallery unleashed the demon Neron, a prince of hell who granted dozens of villains, as well as a few costume heroes, increased powers in exchange for their souls. At the suggestion of Trickster 2, Captain Marvel offered his soul to Neron in exchange for Earth's freedom. As the Trickster deduced, Marvel's soul was too pure for the demon to touch, but Neron was forced to honor his end of the bargain. Subsequently, the Flash and his wife, Linda Park, managed to outwit Neron and foil a rampage by the rogues' ghosts, restoring them to life. During the event known as the Day of Judgment, Neron was imprisoned by an unholy alliance of the demon Etrigan, Asmodel, and the Spectre. Breaking free from his prison by possessing Superman's body, Neron attempted to claim the Spectre force for himself, but the Spectre instead chose Hal Jordan, the second Green Lantern, as its new human host. After the Infinite Crisis, Neron allied with Felix Faust to deceive Ralph Dibny, the Elongated Man. Although Dibny lost his life, he successfully trapped both Neron and Faust in the Tower of Dr. Fate. For some reason, what is perhaps Neron's greatest accomplishment never comes up in these profiles, but we'll address that later. Cheetah agreed to sell her soul for poorly defined advantages like enhancement of her pre-existing ability, and made cameos in Underworld Unleashed tie-ins like Superman The Man of Tomorrow number 3. She was most prominent in the November 1995 cover dated Guy Gardner Warrior number 36 by Beau Smith and Mark Campos. Cheetah joined a group of villains indebted to Neron in an assault on the Warriors metahuman bar, alongside the Earth 2 Huntress foe Earthworm, and Booster Gold's enemy Blackguard. The now more feral and undeniably stupider Cheetah decided to take over a Planet Hollywood-style tourist trap as her first act after trading her soul to a devil. Cheetah threatened to eat rats, killed a bunch of innocent patrons, got shot in the leg by a depowered, underaged former Green Lantern Orisia, and was punched by Lead of the Metal Men. Ultimately, she was tricked into a meat freezer by the Golden Age pugilist vigilante Wildcat that happened to be able to reach sub-zero temperatures in seconds, freezing her alive. So again, probably the single best-known Wonder Woman foe of all time is associated with the absolute dregs of DC villainy, people who only received Who's Who entries due to publication proximity. She is beaten by mostly non-powered obscurities in a bar fight in a title already marked for cancellation, in which the actual lead hero doesn't even appear. And all these indignities are visited as part of a supposed upgrade of the villainous. The actual consequences for Cheetah are not addressed until over a year later, in a story arc by John Byrne that began in the January 1997 cover dated Wonder Woman number 117. Since relocating to Gateway City, Diana had formed a friendship with police officer Mike Shore, and it was in this this issue that she had to explain to him that she did not reciprocate his romantic feelings. Shore was then promptly kidnapped by Cheetah and held in an abandoned zoo where 10 years earlier, a disgruntled keeper had released all the animals after the site's closing was announced due to budget cuts. Incredulously, a wild lion still roamed the area. Meanwhile, it was revealed that Minerva had bargained for the resurrection of Chuma because Byrne didn't have a much better sense of propriety than Perez had demonstrated a decade earlier. Chuma was in contact with an executive at LexCorp, offering the exploitation of Cheetah's abilities for scientific and commercial use in exchange for the company's help in capturing the now completely, permanently feral Cheetah so that her humanity might be recovered. This was reflected in a more bestial face, longer body hair, which included a sort of white fur one-piece covering her torso, a great de-emphasis of Cheetah's once pendulous breasts to something more like a light inference of human sexual characteristics, and her near-total lack of intelligent consciousness. As it turned out, Chuma's dialogues with LexCorp was only ever an expository device. They never come up in the resolution of the story. With the help of Chuma's sorcery, Wonder Woman met Cheetah on a mystical plane where she was able to reassert Barbara Minerva's human form and intelligence. The core of the story was handled in two issues, but even during that brief span, the Cheetah aspect was being sidelined by a more pressing narrative involving the Amazons of Themyscira slowly turning to stone. Diana had unintentionally shattered her fist during the initial attack of the feral Cheetah, so despite the effort put into upgrading her powers, Wonder Woman literally beat her unconscious with only one hand at the first opportunity. Later, Diana appeared to briefly die as she crumbled to dust, was judged by her gods, and then restored to human form. Her trial involved the presence of character witnesses like her co-worker Helena Sandsmark, whose tween daughter was in tow. Seemingly by chance, Zeus granted Cassie Sandsmark powers that would lead her to become the next Wonder Girl. Meanwhile, the Bonnie McDoll Amazon Artemis, who had briefly replaced Diana's Wonder Woman before being killed by the White Magician, had been seen in spirit in Neron's hell during Underworld Unleashed. Both she and Neron returned to plague Diana, and Neron struck Diana with a blast of infernal energy which prompted her lingering death. This was officially pronounced on the cover of Wonder Woman number 126 in a faux newspaper headline. Released on August 27th, 1997, I remember that comic was still sitting face up on my table a few days later when actual newspaper headlines announced the death of Princess Diana of Wales in an eerie parallel. Ever since taking over the title with number 101, John Byrne tried to use a sensationalistic angle to boost sales. Since Batman had already been broken, Superman had already died, and both Green Lantern and Wonder Woman had fielded replacements, Byrne's initial plan was to marry Diana off with his Steve Trevor stand-in Mike Shore. When that was scuttled, I guess Byrne eventually decided to revisit the death angle, just in time for his Genesis crossover event. However, the Neron-induced death predated Genesis, the crossover itself was poorly received, and Diana's recovery as a newly christened Goddess of Truth by the Greek pantheon happened after the event. Hardly anyone ever remembers that any of this ever happened, and as previously noted, it gets left out of Neron's history books. For all intents, it appears that it was editorially excised from the canon of the time. July 1998's JLA 80-page Giant No. 1 placed a Perez model Cheetah in the Secret Society of Supervillains for a short story by Miller and Jones. This continued into Legend of the DC Universe 80-page Giant No. 2, cover dated January 2000, featuring A Little Goes a Long Way by Dan Curtis Johnson and Amazonia's Phil Winslade. Wonder Woman oversleeps after Gateway City experiences a power outage caused by the Cheetah. She's awoken by Helena Sandsmark, who wanted her daughter to have a normal weekend instead of training that morning as the latest Wonder Girl. The Cheetah taunts Diana through the media, claiming to have something the Amazon will want back, and the princess soon discovers her lasso of truth is missing. Wonder Woman tracks Cheetah to yet another Gateway City Zoo, where she has to fend off a stampede of wild animal Minerva has released. Cheetah herself winds up dangling precariously above an alligator pit, and asks that Diana throw her the lasso. Wonder Woman instead flies to her rescue, and soon learns that Minerva had a map to Paradise Island that she had gotten from Lady Lunar, a little-used villain from 1979. Both Lady Lunar and Cheetah had been confined to Arkham Asylum for the criminally insane and not Reformation Island, because there was no such place as Paradise Island in post-crisis DC continuity. Lady Lunar not only wasn't a reliable narrator, but come to think of it, she wasn't in post-crisis continuity either. So yeah, it turned out that Cassie had borrowed the lasso without permission to force a videotaped confession from a school bully. Except at this point in continuity, Wonder Woman was the Goddess of Truth and was merely using the lasso as a conduit for her inborn powers. So the confession was voluntary. Diana resolved to work more ethics lectures into the remorseful Wonder Girl's training. Barbara Minerva popped up sporadically throughout Phil Jimenez's run on Wonder Woman beginning in 2001, but the writer-artist was more concerned with his new male fourth incarnation of Cheetah. I'd rather not devote any time to researching that idiot, so I'll just read his entry from Wonder Woman's Secret Files and Origins. Little or nothing is known about the new Cheetah. His true name is Sebastian Ballesteros, a dashing rogue of a man who grew up in poverty in Argentina, only to become a powerful corporate raider and the head of Ballesteros Corporation. At some point, Sebastian discovered the ancient bloodletting ritual of the Cheetah, a rite usually reserved for virgin women. Devising a bargain for Urs-Kartarga, the African god who gave the Cheetah its powers, Sebastian took on the mantle and powers of the Cheetah. Later, Sebastian made a pact with the sorceress Cersei and became her lover. Using technologies his company now owns from a corporate raid of Armbruster International, the two transformed Wonder Woman's close friend Vanessa Capitellis into the Silver Swan. First appearance, Wonder Woman, second series, number 170, cover dated July 2001. There was a whole extended subplot involving a new version of the Angleman and the resurrected Chuma, where Minerva used the power of the Furies to become a sort of cosmic cheetah to defeat Ballesteros, and he was later killed off by Minerva in the Greg Rucka run on the book. But that would be an even deeper dive than this, involving material I find far less relevant to producing good stories in the future, so I'll miss you with that for now. Rucka's near 3 years on the Wonder Woman title were comparatively light on Cheeto appearances, though he did conspire with Geoff Johns for a crossover with the Flash title in 2005. It involved Minerva becoming romantically linked to the maniacal super speedster Hunter Zolomon, who helped her improve her own ability to zoom. The highlight for Cheetah in the story was that she slashed the Flash's neck, and were it not for his super speed healing factor, that would have killed him. And she did kill the little referenced Golden Age Cheetah, who by that point was well into her 80s. Not the most impressive feat. In issue number 222, Rucka also had Cheetah narrate a story that recapitulated her origins and history. While barring from Priscilla Rich to give Minerva a stronger motivation of envy felt toward Diana's relationships to God and man versus Minerva's mistreatment by Same. In the December 2003 third issue of Loeb and McGinnis's beautifully drawn but otherwise terrible Superman-Batman series, Cheetah was amidst the legion of supervillains and later heroes thrown under the bus to remind everyone who has the world's finest penises. Never mind what you heard about the recently leaked Dick Wayne's Bruce pics, which was a totally planned fake leak and also a slight variation on the depressing exploitation of the Dark Knight's constant sadness porn. Anyway, Cheetah was lost in the shuffle of dozens of characters after another dumb pinup splash in a series of them. Simone and Eggleston's Villains United number 1 from July 2005 saw Deathstroke the Terminator invite a cheetah preoccupied with eating a deer to commit to a new society made up of supervillains. As Underworld made clear, Minerva's a joiner, and she even partook of a gangland-style beating of a sextet of villains who refused the call in the second issue, setting up the formation of the modern era Secret Six. This also led into a story arc running through the November 2005 Superman titles, wherein Cheetah was sent by Lex Luthor to recruit Bizarro into the society. December 2005's Infinite Crisis number 1 by Johns and Jimenez saw the society massacre a prefabricated incarnation of the Freedom Fighters. Cheetah detected the invisible Phantom Girl and drew blood, but it was the Terminator who administered the death stroke. Why let a villainess have the modest distinction of killing a very minor heroine when she could be another notch on Slade Wilson's belt? Also, Cheetah helped in the lethal assault on Uncle Sam. I think it was lethal. It's Uncle Sam. I'm not looking it up. Cheetah was in crowded scenes and successive issues. June 2006's tie-in Villains United, Infinite Crisis Special, showed Cheetah being blasted by Black Canary's cry, and later catching Dinah in a chokehold. The final issue of the main series had Minerva brought down by Diana and Cassie during a large-scale battle of villains and heroes. In Birds of Prey number 96-97 by Simone and Sequeira, Dr. Minerva joined Talia al Ghul and Felix Faust in a plan to sway the mystical metahuman teenager Black Alice to the side of the society. Faust saw Alice as too much of a threat to let live, and Cheetah noted beneath her fairy glamour human visage that I've killed kids. Just a bit more succulent, that's all. The trio visited Alice's home in the guise of benefactors offering a college scholarship, but Alice immediately saw through the ruse and hostilities quickly escalated. The titular team of heroines intervened, and almost immediately Cheetah had Black Canary on the ground, ready to rip out her throat. Cheetah was driven back by bolts fired into her face and shoulder by Huntress, a normal human using a crossbow, against the super speedster. Anyway, Black Alice rejected both groups and sent the packing, so Cheetah's numerous threats never amounted to anything. Also beginning in 2005, low-life supervillains began flooding Gotham City's East End at the prompting of Hush, calling it easy pickings to vex Catwoman in her title by Pfeiffer and Woods. Cheetah is once again damned by association with the likes of Dr. Hugo Strange, Smart Bomb, Angleman, Hammer, and Sickle. At least Captain Cold and Clayface were also around. Oh, but at one point, Batman knocked out Cheetah with one punch in issue 47, so place her at the bottom of that sorted list and threat level. In 2006, a new volume of Wonder Woman was launched, in which Cheetah was given a costume and greater control of her powers than she'd ever had before, as part of a group rehabilitation overseen by Cersei. I already covered the story, Who is Wonder Woman, on the 12th episode of this podcast, and intend to cover more issues from this volume on future episodes. Suffice to say that Minerva took on a role more similar to Priscilla Rich and Debbie Domains, appearing more often in human form and displaying less feral tendencies, usually within the context of a group of supervillains. Her profile was raised, but the respect afforded by characters, creators, and readers didn't change all that much. Beginning with the January 2008 cover date debut issue, Cheetah took part in all 7 chapters of Salvation Run by Sturges, Willingham, Chin, and Bennett. Alongside a multitude of supervillains, Cheetah was imprisoned on a hostile alien world by Amanda Waller and her Task Force X squad. The Joker and Lex Luthor divided the villains into two warring armies under their leadership. While Cheetah was one of the women who were at one point proposed as being baby-making machines in the event that the villains needed to start a new society on this distant planet. I think Cheetah ended up on Joker's side at one point because he killed the guy who was making that suggestion. So I guess this one act of quasi-feminism from a man with a long history of domestic violence was enough to make his flavor of patriarchy the preferred one. Then again, during a series of tie-in issues of Catwoman by Pfeiffer and Lopez, Cheetah worked as an errand girl for Lex Luthor. Cheetah and Catwoman were later paired off to explore an alien machine, and later still Cheetah decided to kill Catwoman. The two fought for a bit. Cheetah seemed to have the edge, but then she was knocked out by a Joker exploding cigar Catwoman had stashed. Again, with this. Oh, I forgot that back in the miniseries, Vandal Savage peeled off a side group of four women that included Barbara to serve as his personal harem, in part by pitting them against one another for a secret role as his queen. This was the type of toxic book where, literally, the sentient gorilla contingent had more agency than any of the women. They're not people who do things, they're objects things are done to. Yes, the women do eventually turn on Vandal Savage, but he's probably rescued by Lex Luthor's contingent, who need him amongst the man folk who are building the teleportation device that will return everybody to Earth. No women were needed for the science scene because... women and science. And anyway, one of those sentient gorillas showed up late to pitch in. Who needs chicks when you have a super gorilla? Salvation Run was a lead into the crossover Final Crisis, in which something something fourth world something something any life equation yada yada. Most of the heroes and villains get mind controlled into fascist slaves. Cheetah is one of the very few who manages to escape this fate, thanks in part to her magic based abilities. She teams up with the remaining members of Checkmate, run by Mr. Terrific, and appears to have very satisfying end of the world sex with former JLA mascot turned agent Snapper Carr. He'd gotten teleportation powers years earlier in the Invasion crossover, which was covered in the First Strike episode number 37, but they were dropped for decades, and possibly again if he lost them while risking his life to save Cheetah. All this happened in the one-shot Final Crisis Resist by Greg Rucka, Eric Troutman, Ryan Sook, and Marco Ruby, and not in one of those six-issue miniseries that dudes like the Human Flame and Tattooed Man got. Simone and Scott brought back the Secret Six for an ongoing series, and Cheetah tagged along for a handful of issues beginning in late 2008. In San Francisco, Cheetah was part of a collective of almost exclusively D-list villains tasked with retrieving the Nightwing foe Tarantula, who had absconded with a literal get-out-of-hell-free card. I can't emphasize enough how pathetic this gathering was, with the next highest visibility characters after Cheetah being Cheshire, King Shark, and Bolt. And then there was a precipitous drop from there. I said downhill from Bolt, in case you missed that. At least Simone had Cheetah betray her comrades and try to talk the Six into giving her the card, as she'd seen gods up close and knew an afterlife of torments awaited her. The Six, as a collective, struggled with Cheetah and acknowledged they had no shot of defeating her, but then they tricked Bolt into fighting her while they ran off. So I'm not sure how much this episode really helped Cheetah's sorry reputation. The class of villain improved somewhat when the Mad Hatter hired another mob of criminals that included Cheetah to steal the card from the villain that originally had it, but Bolt was also alive and among their ranks, so Cheetah couldn't even incapacitate him. And that's about it for Cheetah's adventures before the New 52 initiative. One thing I skipped covering was a bunch of comics where Cheetah proxies appear in the form of simulations, robots, dream sequences, and the like, almost always as a seat filler in groups, and Cheetah is most often treated as a throwaway character to mow down in sequences featuring characters like the Kate Spencer Manhunter and Superboy. In 1996's DC vs. Marvel and the Amalgam one-shot Assassins, Cheetah is merged with Kraven the Hunter, a second-tier Spider-Man villain most famous for eating a shotgun blast to create Lethal. He fought an amalgam of Catwoman and Elektra before being killed by an amalgam of Daredevil and Deathstroke. In 2003's JLA Avengers number 4, Cheetah is shown in one panel struggling with Tigra, a heroine not remotely on a par with Wonder Woman. Despite Cheetah standing as a Wonder Woman foe, she wasn't shoehorned into Kurt Busiek's hot mess of a multiversal weekly maxi-series Trinity until just ahead of its final quarter. She once again mostly hung out with a large group of supervillains and briefly ruled over some version of Washington, D.C., before being depowered and abandoned by a cosmic Wonder Woman who could only recall her as Barbara something. I can't tell you more because I can't bear to read this thing, which I honestly found even less appealing than the infamous train wreck countdown. As a kid, I always liked cat lady characters, but as they became more and more of a cliche in comics, my interest diminished. For a while there, they were almost as ubiquitous on super teams as the strong guy or characters with elemental powers. The New Titans had Panther, the Legion had Cat Small, the Heroes for Hire had the second White Tiger, the Omega Men had Felicity, and the Starjammers had Mamzelle Hepzibah. X-Force had Two and Feral and Thorn, plus X-Factor's Wolfsbane came across about the same. Jim Ballant's Hero Comics have a whole team of them, and reaching out to broader popular culture, you have Chitara in Thundercats and Mres in Star Trek. There's literally even another Whiffcat character named Cheetah, created by Fred Perry in 1991, who went on to become one of the major characters in his Gold Digger series, which has run over 250 issues and is still being published today. There is zero novelty in the Cat Lady approach today, and the Perez model of Weird Cheetah has not met with particular success. Barbara Ann Minerva is not the best of the four bearers of the Cheetah title, and given that that mantle has been passed around to so many different people, I don't understand why DC has so doggedly stuck with Minerva. The character has a litany of flaws and is sociopolitically problematic. Plus, she's been radically reworked several times instead of simply allowing the adoption of a newer, better model. She's an imperious rich white woman with her own estate who is basically an evil Lara Croft before appropriating the power set of an African goddess that came complete with a diminutive simian aboriginal caricature acting as her personal servant. It's the sort of politically incorrect horror show that has kept classic Captain Marvel comics out of print since the year the first Cheetah was created, but was somehow deemed okay since the same year Lady Gaga was born? DC has quietly been redrawing blackface caricatures and reprints of Golden Age Wonder Woman comics for years. But we're all okay with Chuma? Oh, social media is going to inevitably come for him. Probably next year, in fact. So getting out of the way of that is reason enough to replace Minerva. Secondly, Diana's protection of a thoroughly corrupt recidivist serial killer hands a straw woman argument to men's rights activists over the misandry in Wonder Woman comics. Seriously, Barbara Minerva is the worst. Yet Diana has time and again shielded her from justice on account of her having ovaries, essentially. It's not helpful. Third, the post-crisis version of Cheetah has a lousy, unlikable personality that lacks nuance and depth. She's basically Roseanne Barr as played by Joan Collins. She's also inconsistent, because she's often lethally treacherous, yet plays at honor and paying off debts when it comes to Wonder Woman, yet also refuses to seek treatment for her problems and continues to heel turn on Diana. She's not a problematic friend, nor an anti-heroine. She's just a lame, wishy-washy villainess who doesn't deserve the regard that comes with being an upper echelon Wonder Woman foe. Fourth, while she was a solid threat under Perez, every creator since has defined Cheetah as someone easily whipped by Wonder Woman. She had to be rescued in Operation Cheetah, was an impotent frenemy during the Challenge of Artemis, was a whipping girl in various DC titles, fell into a sort of Harvey Dent, poor Barbara can't help herself from being bad role, and even after various upgrades remained a negligible presence in the greater DC universe. In the animated Timverse of the Justice League cartoon, she was a werewolf stand-in for Catwoman who got seduced by Batman. In the first and to date still only Wonder Woman solo animated movie, she was a one-scene coda rogue beaten by Diana before the credits rolled. Her best showing in cartoons was Justice League Doom. But that was mostly just her being one of the few women in a collective of second-tier male villains teaming up against heroes after having failed individually. Fifth, Barbara Minerva lacks a compelling motivation and a formidable power set. She never seems to look for a cure to Urskar Targa's curse, but instead inexplicably fixates on the Lasso of Truth and other artifacts that typically compromise her instead of empowering her. She's fast, has claws, and a choking tail, which is rather weak in comparison to the amazing Amazon she's pitted against. How can she be credible in her job when Catwoman, Black Canary, and Wildcat have kicked her tail? She gets level-ups from male villains like Neron and Zoom, but for little clear reason and which go nowhere. She fights Wonder Woman because that's what she was created to do, not because she has any particular antipathy toward her. At a conceptual level, the Minerva Cheetah has no reason to exist. She's a derivative, uninspired cat chick who now bites elements of Catwoman shtick, and despite a large body count, has never killed a notable character that wasn't also named Cheetah. She gets beaten up by most anybody who crosses her path, regardless of stature or their lack of special abilities. Minerva's a bit like Melania Trump, but with less of a mystique. And to paraphrase her notorious jacket, if she doesn't really care, why should we? Sixth and finally, there aren't any great Barbara Minerva Cheetah stories. Blood of the Cheetah mostly works because of Perez's visuals, but it takes a while to get going, has too many distracting tangents, and has an anticlimactic ending. Despite the multi-issue subplot buildup, Cheetah was in a one-off issue, then dropped for a couple of years. Her multi-party with the Chris Marinan R is no great feast for the eyes, and the Cheetah aspect of that arc was unceremoniously dropped to focus on the Amazons of Banda Miguel. Her role as a handicapped victim in need of Wonder Woman's aid begins with Perez in War of the Gods, and that's been the track she's been on for nearly 30 years since. Minerva is pretty much defined as a scrub carried by Diana whenever she falters, not a worthy adversary, and only rendered sympathetic when laid on thick by Greg Rucka as a non-cishet sexual assault survivor. Yeah, but what about that long history of slaving and mass murder, though? Did we forget that her origin story involved massacring an entire village and committing an act of cannibalism against her partner immediately after he'd saved her life, and whose only apparent crime was being cowardly? Why are we working so hard to pretend Barbara Minerva is worth all the effort when she is in fact an enormous liability to Wonder Woman? Be sure to follow the Underworld Unleashed coverage at hashtag best event ever. Cosmic Treadmill episode 109 covers Underworld Unleashed number 1. I'm the Gun covers Starman number 13 and Showcase 95 number 12. The 90s Revisited by Walt covers Green Lantern number 68. Justice First Dawn podcast covers Extreme Justice number 10 and 11. Justice Trek covers Justice League America number 105 and 106, plus Rebels 95 number 13. Pop Culture Palace covers The Raid number 18 and 19, plus Abyss Hell Sentinel. Relatively Geeky presents a brief look at 27 7 of the Underworld Unleashed issues. Between the pages, we'll look at the DC Villains Dark Judgment trading card set. And I'll be back, hopefully before the end of the month, for a look at Martian Manhunter's role at the Idlehead of Diablo podcast. Last year's show got attention from Derek William Crabb, Keith G. Baker, Xenozoic Xenophiles, Warlord Worlds, and Rad Adventures Podcasting Network on Facebook. And then on Twitter, we got some loving from the 1 and 8th Sage, Allie Batts, Dr. Ange, Ascani's Son, Between the Pages, Blue Girl, Brett Brock, Brody's Kitchen, Chris Sheehan, Coffee and Comics, Comic Book Vault, Comic Reflections, Dixon Vigree, Dmitry Pimenov, Doug Feig, Ed Moore at Indie Comics Fan, Marvel Bronze Age, Miskatonic, and Till Productions, Eliza McCausland, Inigo Montoya, Fanholes Podcast, Felipe Alves Deo, FKA Jason, Glenn Hinutu Hill, Gord Tolton, Jeffrey Brown, Joe Crawford, Keechee Baker, Kim Lazenby, Mark Danvers, Men, Master of the Universe Cast, Paul Hicks, Paul K. Bison, Rad Adventures Podcasting Network, Randy Caldwell, Renee Manley, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Robert Speculum Fight, Robert Patrick K., Satin Tides Podcast, Sean Phillips, Talking Wonder Woman, Terrence Castingway, Trekker Talk, Unearthly Visions, World World Worlds, Wild Dog Podcast, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast, and Xenozoic Xenophiles. Trekker Talk tweeted, "During my busy September, I missed one of my favorite podcasts, but I'm correcting that now with Diablo Frank on Wonder Woman Wednesday." Justice vs. Dawn tweeted of the then upcoming episode, "I'm still excited, but downloading may wait until I've gotten my new laptop regardless. Sigh." Blue Girl laughed and cried over my efforts to synopsize the Claremont story in timely, concise fashion. Michelle Fife wrote, "Mr. Loeb's run on Wonder Woman has been on my list forever. I've never read a single issue, but that might have to change soon. Great narrative, personal account, by the way." And I believe that this was in relation to the DC OCD episode covering the Mike Deodato Jr. run that I did with Dr. Ange. Darren Sutherland wrote, "Wow, I always enjoy your Diana Prince Wonder Woman podcast, Frank. But this episode was even better than usual. Your enthusiasm for the storyline leapt directly into my head, and I'm hoping I have these issues at home so I can read them. I enjoyed the mention of Ghost, which is a comic I've always liked, as well as the mention of Dr. Strangelove, which is my all-time favorite film. In closing, I just want to say that the personal comments you shared were truly heartfelt. You always bring a delightfully irreverent sense of humor to your shows that make them a lot of fun. But having met you in person, I know your true kindness shines through. You are a great human being, my friend. There is no hiding it. I'll continue to try." Michael Wagner wrote of episode 18 covering the Professor Marston movie, "Woohoo! Guess who's back? Paquita Bat!" Satin Tides Podcast wrote the same episode, "Turn it up. Frank with guest Paquita Trotamundos tackle the infamous Marston movie in the latest Diana Prince Wonder Woman podcast." Finally, Ruth Sutherland of the Ride Adventures Podcasting Network wrote, "Great episode. I really enjoyed the in-depth discussion of this film. Paquita and Frank's lively conversation is so much fun. I value your opinions and appreciate how you explain their different points of view. They did a great job of interjecting how their own personal knowledge and histories influenced their thoughts and interpretations of story elements. You did a thorough job of analyzing many aspects of the film, including the period setting, score, visuals, directions, casting, writing, and more. Thank you for sharing what you thought was best about the film, along with how the mark was missed at times. In addition to already knowing that Paquita is a strong female, I now like knowing Paquita studied the martial art of karate. I also appreciated the comic history that Frank shared about the history of Wonder Woman." Wonder Woman is the copyright of DC Comics Entertainment. This is a non-profit fan-produced podcast. No infringement of any copyrights are intended, and where copyrighted material appears, it is believed protected under fair use. If you enjoy the show, please feel free to leave a comment on the Diana Prince is the New Wonder Woman blog, the Rolled Spine podcast blog, write to me at emailofdiablu@yahoo.com, featuring two underscores, or just hit me up on Twitter @CommanderBlanks or @RolledSpine. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful week. We'll be right back.